Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast episode. I think it's 141. Not that that's a big deal. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good, Matthew. I'm going to overcompensate today.
All right.
My voice is going to be big.
Yeah.
Fun.
Oh.
Broad.
Oh, no. Engaging. If you're overbroad, if you're overcompensating using fun and energy, that means that right now you're in a period of low energy and less than fun?
Well, my energy's fine, I guess. Thank you, coffee. But I just had one of those classic starts of the day. So it's 7:30 in the morning. It's dark out.
I'm yep.
ready to go. And I go to get my keys and I realize they're not there. And I'm looking all over for them thinking, that's weird. Like, why aren't my keys here? And then I remember I gave them to my daughter to open the door while we carried in groceries last night.
Oh.
And she's misplaced them.
Yeah.
So the next hour is spent looking for the keys.
That is so annoying because people need to know we were going to do the podcast at 8:30. It's now 9:56. You have plans. You have things to do. You have errands. You have a day ahead of you. And it got ruined by keys.
Okay, so
yeah,
what was the reason I didn't have my keys on me? Because
you gave them to your daughter to open the front door because you guys had the groceries.
Right. And what didn't happen also is my wife forgot to lock the car because we were carrying groceries in.
Right.
And she didn't do the classic turnaround, hit the button, make sure it's locked. She forgot. Mm. So when I wake up this morning, the contents of the car are all over the driveway.
What?
Yeah, somebody broke into our car.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it happens all the time in Parkdale. Honestly, like, it'll happen, like, 4 times a year. Now, that does speak to how often we forget to lock the car.
Yeah.
Well,
but
I shouldn't say we.
Her, you know, it's her. Yeah, it's fine. Listen, no. It's who's driving the car, has the keys, they lock the car. That's fine.
Nothing was stolen.
Okay.
It's actually a brand new car.
No.
It's a Subaru Forester. To anybody who drives a Subi, hey, pal.
I don't know what
apparently, like, people who have cars have, like, I don't know, like a shorthand with people who own the same car, like you're in a club or something.
That's so stupid. And, like,
people call them Subies.
Well, that's because Subaru, I hate the Subaru commercials because they're nothing about cars. They're just about good vibes.
Is that true?
It's all good vibes. Look at a Subaru commercial.
You know, the fact that I own one and don't remember the commercials probably indicates how involved in the process I was.
I don't even know what a Subaru Forester is. I just know that the ads are... anyway.
But there you go. So yeah, lost the keys, car broken into, nothing stolen. And you know what? Honestly, like...
But how often does someone check your car to see if it's unlocked?
I suspect every night.
Really?
Yeah.
The funny thing is your neighborhood, I know... Parkdale. You know, it creates this image, but
it's an upper middle class area.
Oh, yeah. Like the homes in your neighborhood now, just because of what Toronto's like, I mean, those are probably going for at least $1 million a home. And yet, you know, cars still get broke.
We bought in early.
Yeah.
We got very lucky.
That's key.
That our cruddy neighborhood became a desire. I remember when we were looking there, because I grew up in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I remember people, I was living downtown at the time, you know, classic small apartment downtown, guy in his 20s, first job, that kind of thing. And we were looking for a home, Sandra and I, and I was saying, I'm thinking about going back to Parkdale, just because. And someone's like, ooh, that's an up-and-coming neighborhood. I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure? True story. The first day, and we'll get to the Leafs and the Raptors and everything in a second, but true story, I was trying to convince my wife that we should move there, and she was not convinced. Not maybe the East End.
Give sort of the year time of it.
Yes, 2005?
2005, okay.
Like that,
yep.
Six. Anyway, 2003.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, a while ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm convincing her, it's a great neighborhood. We go for a walk. We're talking about maybe getting the place. We get to the corner of Lansdowne and Queen, full-on hooker fight. Just like a Pier 6 brawl, like rolling down the sidewalk, two hookers just pummeling each other.
Like something of Springer.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, it is remarkable when you look at a lot of different neighborhoods. Like I remember Ossington in 2000, Ossington and Bloor, south of Bloor. There was nothing there.
Nothing there.
Now it's all just restaurant, restaurant, restaurant.
It all used to be tinted windows and karaoke places.
Yeah, at best.
And faux.
Yeah, the whole.
And you could get faux.
And Dundas West, same thing. Like so many, you know, so many neighborhoods.
That's why the key, and if there are any of these spots left, is buy shit.
Yeah.
And hang tight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's it.
That's the look. That's the extent of my financial wizardry. So you can call me Warren Buffett if you want to. Nice. Buy a shit home and hang tight. There you go. Mastering the Toronto market. There's my seminar.
Yep.
All right. So do you want to do happy Raptors or do you want to do sad Leafs?
I have a Leaf question for you.
Okay. So let's do sad Leafs.
Tonight's game against the Vegas Golden Knights. What do you think the majority of fans are doing? Are they love watching or are they hate watching tonight's game?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Don't think that's not going to be the poll question on my show today.
Yeah, that's actually a really good one. I guess it depends on whether you think Babcock should be fired or not. Because if you're love watching, you want them to pull it together because you think this is the crew that can go on a deep run in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Coach included. You're hate watching if you think, bless you, if you think with just a couple more ugly losses, Babs is out of town. So that's how I'd answer that question. Me personally, I'm love watching because I just can't do that again.
Yeah.
That Saturday was the most depressing thing ever.
Yeah, and it was followed up by not the best Friday as well.
Yeah, but that Saturday.
I know.
That was special.
Is this this is the worst Leafs season just from pure aesthetic and just the goal of watching a team is to be entertained. This is since not the tank year for Matthews, but the year before that. You know, like the final year of like Kessel and Waffles and salute jerseys and salute game. Yeah, exactly.
All the stupidity. Kadri getting suspended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, how much of what's going on this year, how much of it is traced back to Kadri being suspended against the Bruins? That doesn't happen. Maybe they win that first round last year. They keep him. They don't make the trade for Tyson Barry. At least they have one guy who they know is going to be, you know, physical and, you know, give a bleep. Like, I do wonder how much of what we're seeing now goes back to dumb Kadri and his dumb playoff.
That's a great question. Let's follow that through. So if Kadri continues in the series and they win.
They were up 3-2 in the series.
Right?
Yeah.
Then perhaps there's less impetus to change the roster. Perhaps he's seen as more of a key piece as opposed to a recurring nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the case, does Jake Gardiner stay?
Probably.
Are they more inclined to keep the band together?
Probably not, because eventually they knew what was happening. They still had to sign Matthews.
It's funny
because
he would have probably signed for like $2 million a year more than what he wound up getting in Carolina if he would have been in Toronto.
Gardner would have been, Jake Gardner would have been gone. That was fait accompli.
That is an interesting question, though, because sometimes you play so many games, but when you do the retroactive thing, sometimes you can point to one game everything changed.
And if they beat
Sam Mitchell fired when they lost to Denver on the road by 55 points.
Yeah.
And they were just waiting to get rid of him.
Yeah.
And finally, I think they were like 8-9 at the time. They weren't even that bad.
Yeah.
But there was just an ugly enough loss for the knives out to get out.
It's like when you're ready to dump someone, you just need that one little thing to say, that's it, it's over. You know, that one.
We missed the elevator. That's it. I can't do this anymore.
You know, you sneeze on yourself and like, all right, that's it. I'm dumping you. And you know, maybe the Leafs. I mean, it wasn't like that was such a weird year last year in the playoffs with Tampa losing, with all these high end teams losing. Maybe Toronto goes on a run. Not saying they win the cup, but maybe by going on the run, they learn what it takes to win and the maturity that it instills in guys like Matthews and Nylander and Marner. Maybe it translates to this year versus, you know, this embarrassment we've seen from the players.
That's a great point about the Boston thing. I don't even know if you need to go on the run. I think if you just beat Boston, then there's enough signs of progress that the feeling that you have to overhaul the roster goes away.
Yeah.
And maybe some of these bit pieces, like maybe a Connor Brown doesn't get dealt.
This is a Marvel what if.
Right. Maybe, you know, Patrick Marleau is given one more year.
No, I think they still try to do their best.
No, probably.
They try to get rid of him because they
What if he was okay in the playoffs?
But they couldn't afford him because they still needed to pay Marner and Matthews.
You're right.
So
this is a Marvel what if. They're making a show about it, eh?
Oh, are they really?
Yeah, they're doing a Marvel what if show.
What streaming service are they doing it on?
No, who knows? All of them, none of them.
Can I just say this?
Sure.
Are we
quick sidebar?
Yeah. Are we? I'm going to go. Old man worried about the dystopian future. you can now use Grubhub to get them to go to the movie theater to get you the popcorn to bring it to your home. I know this because Sean McKenzie, Bob's son for Sportsnet, great guy, he's done that. I applaud it because Sean has no children, so he has more disposable income. But
how much does it cost? Because movie popcorn's already like insanely expensive.
Let's just say $10 for the pop. I'm going to say he spent $25 for that.
For a bag of popcorn?
For a large bag.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Live your best life,
Live
Sean.
Your best life. So
those days will end.
Those days will end. You've got Grubhub and all the food, you know, delivery services. And now you got Disney and their streaming, and you got Hulu and Crave and Netflix, and, you know, TVs are better. I do wonder about, and you were telling before that story, but you went into some restaurant and it was empty, but it was packed because it was
They said that they couldn't serve us for an hour, even though it was half full. And we realized it's because the entire kitchen was too busy making meals to be food-orid.
To be Grub or Grubhubbed or whatever.
Whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. And I do wonder just about a society that's more and more about everyone is just staying inside. I do wonder about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. How's anyone going to get laid in the future?
I have no idea. It's a great question. Like, to me, I loved when I had grown up in Etobicoke, every Friday or Saturday, we would take the same bus to get us to Sherway to either go to the mall or to go to the Sherway movie cinema. And we did that over and over and over and over again. Like, you had to put the work and the effort, and you appreciated the movie more because you had to put the work in just to get there. And I do wonder about that lack of anticipation, that lack of foreplay before the satisfaction.
With the exception of Dungeons and Dragons, everything I did before the age of 30 was to try and meet somebody from the opposite sex.
Absolutely. 100%.
Okay, I want to go back to a couple theories here.
Yeah.
I think that this Leafs iteration, if it continues to slide, and that game particularly against Pittsburgh, is actually worse than the Salutegate year, and I'll tell you why. Mm. Because the smart fans out there knew that the Leafs weren't really that good under Randy Carlyle.
Yep.
They knew that not only was he the wrong coach, but the roster was wildly overrated. Guys were being played out of position, way too high in the lineup. They didn't really have as much talent as maybe sometimes you thought they did.
If Phil is your best offensive player and Phaneuf is your best defensive player, you're in trouble.
If you really look hard at those lineups, they're okay.
Ugh.
They're okay. They're a team that if they play smart, probably makes the playoffs, but doesn't do much when they get there.
Yeah.
On the other hand, this team is built to win. It was supposed to be built per the Shanna plan, the smart way, incrementally, and this was supposed to be the year where all of the dividends start to come through.
Yeah.
And now they look worse than they have at any point in time except for the PA Parenteau years. And even then, they were playing at least smart hockey. No talent. Colin Greening, you know, keep going down the line.
Yeah.
But they were playing smart and hard, and they were quite likable because of it. So I actually think this is worse, because at least then you knew it was shit and it was going to have to be blown up. But to blow this up is to say the last 5 years of trying to do it the right way just didn't work.
There's something very unsatisfying when your team is spending to the cap.
Right.
And all this perceived talent. And yet, over the last 82 games, not a small sample size, the last 82 games, the Leafs have about 35 wins. So basically, all this money and this belief and skill and everything else, it's gotten you the Arizona Coyotes. That is very unsatisfying if you are a Leaf fan. And I don't care if you are the on the Dubas zealotry side, or you hate Dubas with a thousand suns, or wherever you are on it, this is wildly unsatisfying.
If I understand this correctly, I've been going through my timeline and analyzing the responses. Everybody blames the players. More people blame Babcock than Dubas.
Yes.
But the people who blame Dubas think he really effed up generationally here.
Yeah.
And the ones who blame Babcock think that if you just put in a coach who better used his team, they'd look better tomorrow.
Yeah.
So the Dubas naysayers are more apocalyptic.
Yes. Of course.
Right?
The higher,
am I following this correctly?
Yes, 100%. Because the higher up on the food chain you blame, the worse it is.
Right.
If the worst thing that your team has is like, we just need another bottom six defenseman, you're a really good team. If the number one problem is the people deciding everything, that's a bad thing.
I was thinking about Paul Westhead and the Nuggets of the early 90s. This is
Right. I know where you're going with this.
Okay. So if you don't follow basketball, Paul Westhead was a coach who got hired to coach in the NBA, which was weird. And it was especially weird because he was a college coach who had a very steadfast belief in scoring all the time.
Yeah.
He wanted the ball up in 7 seconds or less. In fact, the team that year, they thought might break 200 points in a game. Didn't matter how many points you gave up. Just outscore the other guys.
Yep.
And they were awful.
Yep.
And the next year, I didn't know this because I did a little bit of research. The next year, you know who they drafted? Denver, after they fired Paul Westhead?
Who?
Dikembe Mutombo.
Oh, God. that's overcompensating.
Right? Now that, but that's a market correction.
Yeah.
Like the greatest, slowest, defensive post player of his era.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about Paul Westhead, he was totally wrong in his day. And his approach was absolutely a disaster. But he was right.
Yeah.
Because the tempo did pick up. And it did become about ball movement, jack shots, you know. And eventually it took a rosters like Golden State's to make good on the promise of offense all the time. Now, Golden State actually has a really great defense.
Yeah. Draymond Green.
and Kevin Durant. We'll get to your coughing in just a second.
Iguodala and Klay Thompson as well.
Right. And you saw how Iguodala shut down LeBron. So it's not like they played no defense. But the idea that the game would evolve offensively.
Yeah.
Paul Westhead was ahead of the curve. He took a chance. They flamed out entirely. So I look at the Leafs and Dubas and think, are we seeing the experiment that fails to get to the experiment that works? Happens all the time with innovators.
It does.
Mostly right, just wrong enough to feel like a failure.
It's a good question. It's a great question because it goes to where do you think the NHL will be in 20 years?
Right.
Or 10 years.
10 years
from now.
Right.
Can the St. Louis Blues win the Stanley Cup in that style in 2025?
Right.
Because if teams like that are winning it in 2025, then the Leafs are in trouble.
When I started in sports radio, the Kings were atop the roost. And everybody wanted to be the Kings. And it was about playing heavy hockey. It was about recovery was about bodying guys off the puck. And just like wearing the opposition down. It was all about zone starts and trying to just control the flow of the game. I think that team would get its ass kicked in by the top five, like by a Boston Bruins team or a Washington Capitals team or any of these really good teams this year. I think that team would get their ass kicked in the playoffs because they just couldn't keep up.
Mm-hmm. The problem is the Leafs have none of the physical. That's like... Like you go back to the Boston game on Friday night, the Charlie Coyle goal, because you know one day the Leafs will have a guy as impactful as Charlie Coyle.
look what he did. Is open.
Look at what he did. Exactly. Look what he did in the playoffs last year. But go back and watch that goal. Boston had the puck for about 40 seconds in the Leafs zone. You know, forget about the embarrassment against Pittsburgh. And that's the problem with this team is that, you know, these guys, they just...
All right, so
they're soft.
We've been nibbling around the edges. You got it up here. Okay, so
they're soft.
The top three, gold, silver, bronze of dog shit, right? Everybody's got their own version. What's your hierarchy? Who's the worst? What's in the middle? And what's the most forgivable?
right now, the number one guy that's like we're talking disappointment.
Yeah, or like the cause of this malaise. Going back to last year, Morgan Riley.
Okay, we're just going players.
No, not players. Oh. Players, coach, management. We can get into players individually in a bit.
Okay, players first.
Yeah,
because they're the ones on the ice. Now, the funny thing is, if you go players first, shouldn't you go management second?
Mm-hmm.
Just by...
Because they got picked by management.
They got picked by management.
And if they're the wrong players, what's the coach supposed to do?
But I'm going
to
go coach second, management a close third. And it's because Cody Ceci is still playing on the number one line.
Right.
You know, it's not enough experimentation. Like, all that talent and the power play is still in the 20s. Get the hell out of here with that. And also, then finally, the refusal to maybe switch the goalie, the backup starter goalie around a little bit. Like, just the refusal to try anything.
To be that galling. Headstrong.
Yeah, to be that headstrong. And also, Babcock, it stinks right now that you're getting speedbagged by a Nick Nurse who's in the same building as you. So, I'll go players first. Coach second with management, a close third. I think Dubas gets to skate a little bit, and he probably shouldn't be.
Well, Dubas gets to skate a little bit because he assembled a ton of talent.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's not winning talent.
Not yet.
Not over the last 82 games.
Right. Agreed. But it's not like he's overpaying for terrible players. He's overpaying for great players.
Yes.
And in theory, in a cap system, that should be less of a sin than giving mediocre to poor guys more money than they're worth.
Yep. No, it's good. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Cody Ceci feels like that was too much money.
Yes.
Right? mm-hmm. they had to do something.
Yeah.
Or did they? I don't know. Maybe they would be better off with Ron Hainsey in town. That's a big what.
That's another debate because about Morgan Riley.
Remember we talked about this?
Yeah.
We talked about how, just like you said about Zach Hyman's pretty good, eh? That Babcock would eventually start with the Ron Hainsey was pretty good, eh?
Yeah. I think we all owe Ron Hainsey an apology.
We really do.
He got
so Bozak, though. He got played out of position.
I want to put a list together of the people we owe apologies to, like maybe Chris Bosh.
that would be a good top five for next week. Top five mea culpas. I like that idea. So here's why I think Babcock's not the right guy. And I actually don't think he's a bad coach, and I think he's a very intelligent guy.
Yeah, he is. You don't get the 700 wins without it.
Right. Although Randy Carlyle had a ton of success, and then, you know, like the game eventually passes you by.
Yeah.
Maybe that's happening to Babcock, and maybe it isn't. But I think the Leafs are... I started thinking about the idea of the Leafs D, and we've always meant it to mean defense, right?
Yeah.
Here's what I'd like to call the Leafs D from now on. Disruption. The Leafs are at their best when they're disrupting things. They're not big enough to intimidate. They're not going to knock the other team off the puck. But what they can do with their speed, and if they themselves are strong on the puck, is they can cause hell out there. They can, like, they are a transition team. Mm-hmm. They're a team that's begging to create turnovers or do quick recoveries in the defensive zone with a quick 10-foot pass that gets you flying through the zone. And no other team's going to be able to keep up with that, or very few. And you know who hates that?
Mm.
Babcock. Babcock hates what they do best. He's dying for them to be the model of a team that just, you know, cycles down low and is, you know, heavy on the puck. Like, that's what he wants. He wants a defense that isn't the defense he got. He wants, bless you. He wants...
These are all coughs. These are not sneezes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, point being... I'm not going to rip Babcock because I think he could go somewhere else and have a ton of success. The way Lou Lamoriello's had a ton of success, right? Different reasons, but the same kind of effect. My point is, I think he hates his team. And I think the team is so tired of trying to be a team they're not that they're starting to tune him out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you wind up with 6-1 and Malkin dangling, basically playing why do you keep hitting yourself, Leafs?
Yeah. Well, shame on the players. You can hate your coach, but you still, like, just the amount of times where they let the opponent shoot from the high danger areas and the few times the Leafs actually try to occupy that space, to me, that's just about pride, you know, and just about doing the job. Now, Mike Babcock absolutely gets an F for a lot of players not putting them in a position to succeed. And I think you're right. I think he probably does hate some of his players in the style. But it's like, hey, Mike, suck it up. These are the players. It's your job. You know, it's your job to put them in a position to succeed. Mike Babcock is not doing that. It's a dangerous combination. The coach isn't putting the players in a position to succeed, and the players go through large, large stretches where they just don't give a bleep.
Arguably speaking, the best coach in North America is Bill Belichick.
Yes.
Does that sound right?
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that he's known for is his ability to scheme per week.
Yeah.
That he's going running game, or maybe he's going to test the other team's secondary. Like, the Patriots are whoever they need to be to beat the team they're facing. Mm-hmm. And Mike Babcock would be the exact opposite of that. He's like, he believes on Wednesday whatever he believed on Monday, regardless of what happens Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, 100%. You know, in his system, Brady's under center. He's throwing the ball 25 times. But they're all deep passes, you know, like, yeah, that's going to be him.
I want to throw something that one of your teammates, Kristen Shilton, I was listening to Leafs Lunch yesterday. Andy Petrillo did a really good job. So did Poulin. It was a big show.
Yeah.
And I actually found myself having to tune in. Normally I listen to Merrick because I love Merrick and he's my boy, but they were talking about, you know, Matt Calvert.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't listen to Matt Calvert talk.
The hot Matt Calvert.
Talk. Right. Not after 6-1.
Yep.
So I flipped over to TSN Radio. And she talked about the dynamics of the locker room. And she was saying one of the challenging things this year internally is Jake Gardner and Nazem Kadri had been there from the beginning.
Yeah.
Along with Riley, they were the longest tenured Leafs. They were veterans and their voices had a lot of sway in the room. They're gone. You have young guys who are being elevated to that position, but maybe they don't feel, or the new guys who are veterans, but are new to the team.
Yeah.
Nobody really feels like they're the ones who can say, hey, guys, snap out of it.
Yeah.
And it puts a lot of weight on Tavares, who just may not be that guy. He may be a lead by example kind of guy. Plus, he's playing shit this year.
Yeah, he's not playing great.
Not that that should matter for a guy like him, but he does look shit out there. Anyway, what she said, and it was really interesting, is you get, you know, Gardner's out. He loved the team. Kadri's out. He loved being a lead.
Hainsey as well would grab players and just bring them together.
You know, Muzzin, deal up at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Barry, deal up at the end of the year. And Barry basically just parachuted in to start the season. It's hard to ask these guys to be emotionally invested for your franchise. They've got their own careers to take care of.
You know, I
thought it was a really great observation about how a workplace is actually structured.
By the way, for Kristen, it's about time she dealt with this. Her first year with the Leafs, the first game she covered, Matthew scored 4 goals in his first game against Ottawa. This is the first time she's had to face any adversity.
No, she's responded really well. She did an amazing job.
It's a good point by her. And it makes me wonder about the emotional maturity of this team. Like, I feel the Leafs right now, you could do a panning shot when they were down 5-1 to Pittsburgh, and all of them would have just been on their iPhones. You know, just on their iPhones, just checking, checking Facebook or whatever, not Facebook, checking Snapchat or whatever. And then they just get
TikTok.
Go TikTok. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, go on the ice now. What's that? Oh, sorry, coach. Let me just pause, save, and then go out there. Like it doesn't feel like it is a group right now. It feels like a bunch of individuals, because individually, you know, Marner point per game, Matthews, wow. Nylander go
playing better
these long stretches where these guys are great fantasy wise. They're great fantasy wise, just not that good hockey wise.
I'm going to get to something I said on Twitter that caused a lot of controversy.
Ooh, do it.
But I want to throw you out a question first, because I was thinking about this. I'm going to read it the way I wrote it.
Okay.
It may not be good, but I'll do my best. Which Leafs team would make you feel better? A pretty good team that played structured and hard, overperformed to get to 98 points going into the playoffs, or a team with a ton of talent that underperforms but also gets 98 points
and goes into the playoffs? Door number one.
Which team do you like better going into the playoffs? Not like personally, but think can go farther.
Door number two.
Me too.
Yeah.
And door number two is the team with lots of talent that underperforms but still gets 98 points. That's why I refuse to panic.
Well, that's good. I am panicking. I am absolutely in
the panic. Talent is there, and you can't invent talent.
But have we been hoodwinked a little bit? Because I have to ask these questions. I'm going to put emotion aside.
Okay.
Fact, as I threw it earlier.
So emotion is going to be like the little cup of coleslaw that you get in that paper cup.
Yeah.
Right? The little Dixie cup of coleslaw that accompanies the fish and chips that I can't have anymore.
Oh, my God. Now I feel like fish and chips.
God, I want fish and chips.
I put the coleslaw right on top of the French fries. Mix it together.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. And then
really?
And then
it makes
the
French fries soggy then.
Oh, Bob. Do you think I'm lingering when I'm eating fish
and chips?
That's
a good point. They never had a chance.
They don't have a chance to get soggy. Who's kidding who? You don't think the commercial, oh, my Captain Crunch. Oh, no. I left the milk in too long. It'll get soggy. No, I'm 8.
You're day trading, though.
Yeah, exactly. Gone. So 82 games is a good sample size.
Mm-hmm.
They've lost more games than they've won. So what does that say about the talent? They consistently have the same problems over and over again. Like, these are just the facts. Maybe we don't factor in defense, defensive responsibility, emotional IQ, you know, like the ability to, when you make a mistake and you get scored on, to not go through a 5-minute funk. Like, these things maybe are talents and skills, and the Leafs are devoid of them.
Okay, so two things, and you make good points. One is the 5-minute funk, and you've heard this a lot over the last few weeks. We need our guys to be more resilient when something goes wrong.
Yeah.
But that's confidence.
Yeah.
And when you get your ass kicked in, your confidence naturally fades. Toronto's a tough market, but just losing in general, no matter where you are, nobody feels good about that. And the other teams are like, they're out there to punish you for your weakness. You know, they'll exploit anything they can. And if you're going to be down on yourself, they're going to pour it on. That's coaching. You know, I was thinking about this, Matty. I was thinking about when I first went to TSN Radio and I was working with Cebulski. And our show was actually doing pretty good out of the gate. And I got in there and it started to go further and further down.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt really, really guilty. And really like I was doing a terrible job.
Which is crazy, because you weren't.
Well, but the thing is, though, they become self-fulfilling prophecies, because I do think my performance suffered because I started to second guess myself.
Mm.
And, you know, what really happened was we were up against McCowan.
Yeah. And, it's a tough one.
You know, and I'm not even sure that I was necessarily the best co-host for Cebulski. I thought he was really good. And I think, you know, I'm glad he landed in morning radio in Vancouver, because he's A, a great guy. But B, he's probably more suited for mornings than he is afternoons. Mm-hmm. He's got all that great, you know, energy here.
Yeah.
But anyway, my point is this. When I landed with you, I felt every day that you and I could go out and make the best radio show in the world.
Yes.
I really felt that. The only thing that changed was A, how I was used, but B, and more importantly, how I felt about myself.
Yeah.
And I give Rob Gray, who was our PD at the time, he wasn't like a hold your hand kind of guy. He was a kind of a, you're hired to go do a job, go do it.
Yeah.
But he also took me really seriously when I said, I think Matt should be my partner.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I felt we could go out there and kill it. And he listened and he respected that. And so he gave me the tools he thought I needed to be really good, and then expected me to go be really, really good. Long-winded sidebar to get to the fact that I look at the Leafs. Who's making them feel like they can go out there and win? Yeah. As opposed to blaming them for not being the kind of team that the coach wants them to be. You know, eventually you start to think you're shit. Even Austin Matthews came out and said, you know, the confidence isn't exactly high in this room right now.
Yeah.
The guy walks in and looks at everyone and says, God, you're just not who I need you to be. Who the hell goes out and plays their best in that?
Yep. No, it's a good point. First, thank you, Bob. Macko and Cos was definitely my favorite period of TSN radio.
One of my favorite periods of my career.
Yeah.
You know, and you and I had a lot of confidence.
Yeah. That show was... That show was a blast.
It was a really good show.
It was. As for the Leafs, that is a good point. Is the weird thing is, Mike Babcock, when he first arrived here, I remember he was always saying he's here to create a safe space for the players. Like, it's so funny. So much of what he says, and he says it over and over and over again, would make you feel that he's the right guy for always instilling confidence. And yet the confidence on this team is so bloody low right now.
If you look back at the project from the beginning of Babcock's time, he was at his best when the team was at their worst.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he had a bunch of grinders. I remember Jeff O'Neill said to me once, he goes, you want to know what a coach thinks? Watch the third and fourth line play.
Yeah.
Because the first two lines are worried about scoring and having fun. And the bottom six guys are the ones who are listening to everything the coach says because they're trying to stay in the league.
Yeah.
That made a lot of sense to me. I mean, it may not be universally true, but it does speak to... So coaches, of course, prefer the guys who are going to go out there and do exactly what they tell them to do, even if they don't have the talent necessarily to do it at the level that a star might. But Marner?
Yep.
Remember when he was a fourth liner?
Yep.
Nylander? Remember when, you know...
He got demoted.
He got demoted?
Yep.
Matthews never got that treatment, but, you know, he scored four on his first game, as you say.
Yeah.
But the young guys, you know, he leans on them.
He does. The weird thing is, and then this year, all he did was shit on the veteran, Jason Spezza.
Right, which was weird.
So weird.
And if you listen to the hockey guys, like the guys who used to play and are now commentating, they're all like, yeah, you don't do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You disrespect him, but you also lose the room. And someone made a really good point, too, which is you make those veterans harder to sign in the future, where if you try to convince someone, hey, you can come here and play for $1 million and we'll give you a chance to win. See, like the Tyson Berry thing's a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
And the free market, it's a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
His point total looks to be like it's going to be cut in half. Going into a contract year, who the hell wants to be part of that organization?
What's going on in his mind? He came here thinking, great, I'm going with an offensive team. I'm going to with a team that's on the rise, and I'm going to get my $40 to $45 million contract. Now, woo! Like, just he's become a depressed stock. This is getting depressing. Man, like, it's funny. This Tuesday game against Vegas, the stakes feel far higher than what it should be.
I think they lose tonight, but I think they lose in overtime. And I think you're going to see a good game.
We'll see.
Everybody just wants to see a good game.
We just want to see a good game. We just have some good.
Right?
And how about like three good games in a row? You know, is that too much to ask? just being satisfied.
Okay, I got a couple of Leafs questions for you. Yeah. And I got a dot, dot, dot. Ooh. And I also want to talk to you about Scorsese.
All right, yes, we got a lot. And my cough.
And your cough. We got a lot to get to. Why don't you talk about Jeff Pollock, and then I've got a question for you.
All right,
about
the Leafs
when we get back.
In terms of being satisfied, very simple. Bob and I are both very satisfied with our legal representation, not just for today, but for the future. It's checked off my box. Like, I got to get my floors redone. I got a lot of stuff to do. Like, there's a lot of things in my life that I know I need to accomplish. One thing I know I don't have to worry about anymore is anything involving the law because of our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. He's got us covered now, tomorrow, and forever. And that sort of peace of mind is something that we'd love you guys to have. He's our lawyer. He should be yours. The number is 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com. Anything from litigation, states, trust, corporate, commercial, real estate law, give him a call. He's our lawyer. He should be yours.
All right. So I sent out a tweet and I got a lot of pushback.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That happens every now and then.
My tweet, paraphrasing, was, is Austin Matthews becoming the NHL's version of Carmelo Anthony?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I saw that tweet. I'm like, what are you doing, Bob? Like, it's like, hey, there's a wood chipper. I wonder how that feels on my forehead.
Okay, so a lot of pushback. And I think that's because people, A, love Austin Matthews, don't want to believe that he's not going to be, you know, generationally great.
Yeah.
And also people hate Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
And he's sort of a superstar who's selfish and entitled and all these things.
Yeah.
That's not how I meant it, though. And I could see how people could see that. I don't think Austin Matthews plays a selfish game. I don't.
No.
But Carmelo Anthony is a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest offensive talents of the modern generation.
Yes.
He also didn't play defense. And could never be convinced to play defense.
Nope.
No matter what.
Yeah.
And people thought if he just tried even a little harder on defense, how much his game and his team would improve.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not forget the fact that he was a 6-time All-NBA player, a 10-time All-Star.
Oh, yeah.
And he won an NCAA championship.
He was he was such a force on that Syracuse team.
Unbelievable.
Him and Hakeem Warrick. I love that team.
Oh, yeah. It was a fun team. But when you think about Carmelo Anthony, it's almost like the fact he didn't play defense overshadows the fact that he's probably in the top 5 to 7 most spectacular offensive talents of our lifetime.
At his peak.
And if Austin Matthews was that, just a goal-scoring machine that never gave you defense, would that be so wrong?
That's been a debate, you know,
right?
Are you like,
is he just who he is?
Here's the boring, correct answer. It's fine as long as his scoring is coming within, is helping the team win.
Which it always does by definition.
Well, I mean, no, because it does to an extent, but if his defensive miscues are also allowing the same amount of goals as he's scoring, then it's a net neutral. So he's not really helping you win.
Do you remember how we'd always say with Jake Gardner that he makes mistakes and they really drive you nuts, but when he's on the ice, he does so many more good things than bad that you got to learn to live with it.
Yeah.
Now, he may be overpaid if he's that guy.
Yeah.
Right? At $11 million per over 5 years, he may be overpaid to just give you offense but be a neutral to negative defensive presence. That may be true.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really interesting to hear people really bristle at the idea that... Like, if I said to you, hey, Matt, Austin Matthews, we drafted him first overall.
Yeah.
He's an offensive genius. Not very great at defense, but man, like, honestly, 50 to 60 goals in the bank for the next 5 years. Would you go, that sucks?
No, of course not.
Right.
Not at all. But.
But hockey's different.
But hockey's different. If he's your number one center, then he has to be better. Like, he has.
But maybe he doesn't even need to be the number one center. We've decided he's that. Like, they did sign John Tavares, who is more of a two-way guy.
Yeah, he is more of a
two-way guy. And scores 40 goals and is of a greater sort of quote-unquote hockey tradition.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing, by the way.
It's a great thing.
Yeah.
Who do you remember how happy we were when he signed him? So maybe Tavares is the guy that we keep wanting Austin Matthews to be. And Austin Matthews is just going to be a goal-scoring machine. That's who they are, and that's what it is.
Then it's up to Babcock. It's up to the wingers around him to help him.
Right.
Because... Like, but He has to do more.
I'm not arguing for this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying maybe this is what it is.
And by the way, you're right. It could be. That absolutely could be the destiny for Auston Matthews. Hopefully it's not, which is weird. I'd rather he score, you know, 38 to 43 goals a year and be defensively a good player than 50 goals a year and be the guy we've seen this year.
I can't remember which game it was, but he had 3 hits in a game. Mm-hmm. And I remember the commentators were making the point that that's quite a bit for Matthews because to this point in the season, he'd had 9 hits all year.
Yeah. Hockey is still like, you know, we're both on the side of get as much skill as you can. And scoring goals is the most important thing. We're in those camps. But we can't ignore, and I think we do, I think I do, can't ignore that sometimes physicality, intimidation, being tough, just, you know, not taking crap from the other team, those are skills, talents, and those play a big role in winning. And I think they play a bigger role in hockey than they do basketball. And I think a lot of the hockey younger analytic people also love basketball. Why not? Damn good sport. So I think sometimes your basketball biases and aesthetic bleeds into hockey when they're different games because hockey by nature, it is not a ton more physical, but it is more physical.
We were always told that a three-point shooting team can't win in the NBA.
Yeah.
Until they accumulated so much three-point shooting talent that the Golden State Warriors became that team.
Yeah.
It's rare. Mm-hmm. They're a pretty rare thing. But you look at the Houston Rockets, who are also dominant, and they're a three-point heavy team. Like, the new analytics are basically from within 5 feet or behind the arc.
Yeah.
And in hockey, you've got the cycle game. Traditionally, you know, starting with the Sedins, well, not starting with them, but maybe perfected in our age by them. It's always been thought, cycle the puck, get down low, control that offensive zone time, you know, tons of offensive zone starts. That's what it's all about. And maybe Dubas is trying to say, okay, well, or it's about the ability to reverse the field of play on a dime and just throw stuff at the other team that they can't handle.
Has that worked?
It's not about trying to overmaster them in a traditional game. It's about trying to blow it up. And I don't think Babcock's the right guy to do that. And I think Dubas wants to see it. And he's just got the wrong guy.
Have we seen that in the playoffs yet? That style win it all?
No, but we also haven't seen the... We also haven't seen the roster that could do that.
So I guess final point, because we got to move on to Scorsese and dot, dot, dot.
We do.
We're 42 minutes in.
We're 40?
42 minutes in.
Well, it was a big loss.
Yeah.
Before we do any of that, are you sick?
I was sick a couple days ago. And by sick, not really, because to me, sick means debilitating. The worst I felt was on Friday. Mm-hmm. On Friday, I did the Breakfast Club from 8 to 9:30, my show from 2 to 4, the night side of Barb DiGiulio from 8:30 to 9:30, and then sitting at home stewing, watching the Bruins game. I hopped on for like a late night Leafs show on TSN. So I'm and then Saturday
you did three radio shows in one day.
Yes, and then Saturday I did the Raptors pre, half, and post of the Raptors.
You're the Michael Strahan.
Oh yeah,
of TSN Radio, of Bell Media.
Wine's not cheap, Bob. So what I look at it is an annoyance. Like, I certainly had a couple of days where just body was aching, head was full, you know, headache going on the whole time. But I could still do enough stuff, and now I just have an annoying cough. So it's not an illness. It's an annoyance.
The cough is like the paper cut of the sick world.
Yeah.
It's just so agitating. It's not dangerous.
No.
Well, I guess it could become dangerous, but it's more of an irritant.
Yeah. And especially when you're
on... It can really ruin your day.
Yeah, especially when you're on radio. Even more so.
The cough button.
Unlike Michael Landsberg, I know where the cough button is.
Doesn't know how to do it? Still hasn't gotten it after all these years?
Still hasn't gotten the cough button. Scorsese, dot, dot, dot. What do you want to do?
Let's do dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
I tick one out because I did the Carmelo Anthony with you already. So yeah. I got three other ones. Who the hell is Kendrick Nunn?
Oh,
okay, wait. Dot, dot, dot. I still don't know who's in the Grey Cup. Dot, dot, dot. And Pearl Jam are overrated. There, I said it. Dot, dot, dot.
Okay, we're going to go with number two.
Okay.
So... there's this quarterback.
I found out this morning Hamilton is.
Okay.
But I still don't know who they're facing.
Winnipeg. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Not Calgary?
No.
Wasn't Calgary the best team?
Not this year.
Oh.
They lost so many players through free agency.
Oh, okay. So Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's exciting for them.
Here's Winnipeg hasn't won the Grey Cup since 1990. Hamilton hasn't won it since 1999. It's the feel-good Grey Cup. But here's the only thing you got to root for. In 2015, there's a fella named Zach Caleros. He was the best quarterback in football.
I remember him. He was the Argos backup for a while.
Yeah.
Then he went to Hamilton.
Then he went to Hamilton.
Then he went everywhere because it's the CFL.
And because of injuries. 2015, ZMOP. Then, late in the year, injury. Out for the year. Spent the next couple of years, great moments, bad moments, injuries. Started this year, week one, playing with Saskatchewan. On the third play, he gets hit, helmet to helmet, concussion. He is out. He gets traded to Toronto. Hangs out there for a couple of weeks.
Who's this again?
Zach Caleros.
Okay. He was back with Toronto for a while?
He was for about 3 weeks. Oh, cool. Then, Winnipeg, quarterback injuries. He gets traded to Winnipeg. Comes into Winnipeg, plays well, gets on a heater, beats Calgary on the road, beats Saskatchewan on the road, and now he's in the Grey Cup facing the team where it started all for him, Hamilton. Zach Caleros, his journey this year, three teams, at least one horrible concussion. Now he's in the Grey Cup.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fun. I don't care, but that's cool.
Yeah.
Is it going to be a good game? Because I'm going to watch.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch mostly to justify the food.
Yeah, of course. You know, you can't just sit there and, well, what are you going to eat?
Wings.
Okay.
Wings. I can still do baked wings.
Can you do like a veggie chili or something? Or
no, because I can't do the beans.
Oh, God. So, it, like, the Zach Calero story is a great one, and this should be a really good game. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I really don't care, and I kind of feel like we've been writing the obituary for the Argos forever, but I think this time it might be true.
Nah, they'll always be bad.
Alan Bethel Thompson.
McLeod Bethel Thompson.
Damn it.
Yeah.
I should have known Alan wasn't classy enough. It was a classy name. Oh, well, I did my best. All right. So, shall we talk Scorsese then?
Yeah.
All right. So, have you seen The Irishman?
I haven't yet.
I'm going to wait for Netflix.
Yeah, I'm going to wait for Netflix as well.
So, here's what I was thinking. I put together a top five. Yeah. In fact, I challenged you online.
You were so pretentious.
I was so good.
It was so, people don't know. You sent me a tweet. Send me your top five. It's like homework. Send me your top five Martin Scorsese films. I'll grade them and send you back the revisions.
No, send you back the corrected copy.
The corrected copy, you dink.
All right, good. All right. So, can we agree number one is Goodfellas?
Yes.
Okay. I had a big debate about this because I think his greatest film is Raging Bull.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's one of the greatest movies ever made. But
it's not rewatchable.
It's really hard to watch.
Yep.
Because it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
The violence in it is terrible. And I mean specifically with him and his wife. Like, it's just hard to watch.
Yeah.
It's a hard movie to watch. It's not fun.
Nope.
Goodfellas is the most fun, even though it's super violent. Like, maybe the most rewatchable movie. But I had a long discussion with myself about what do I consider to be great? Is it the movie that I can watch a million times or the movie that I admire so much but don't enjoy?
But I mean, how much do you admire Goodfellas? I mean, you could...
So much.
Yeah. So Goodfellas is that rare film that is both rewatchable and also brilliant.
So,
because sometimes brilliant, artistic, you know, it can be a hard thing to watch. So yeah, I mean, like, to me, number one is Goodfellas. If you want to have Raging Bull or Taxi Driver at two or three, you know, I can fully see that.
I would put King of Comedy number three personally, but you know, I love that movie.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen Joker yet, but apparently it pulls a lot from King of Comedy.
Yes.
Do you know that Joker is the first R-rated movie to make $1 billion?
It is. Congrats to that.
I guess. Is it good? Have you seen it?
Okay, here's Joker. Joker, it looks brilliant. It sounds great.
Like, you mean looks like the look of it?
Oh, the look of it. Yeah, it's well shot, well edited. Just, you know, I don't, you know, whoever the DP was, like, everyone did a great job. What's his face? Who plays Joker?
Joaquin Phoenix.
He's a tour de force. He doesn't get a nomination. That's ridiculous. His mother does a great job. Robert De Niro does, like, everyone does a great job. The only problem with this movie, it has no joy. Like,
isn't a problem if they don't want joy.
I think even the most dark, depressing movies needs a moment where we can, like, just a moment of joy. And joy doesn't mean, like, the good guys win. But at no point does even There's no victories in the movie. Like the whole time when Joaquin Phoenix is becoming the Joker, he's becoming the Joker because of failure, alienation, just getting crapped on, being embarrassed, being beat up. So that's my only problem. It's so one note. That's my only complaint with the movie.
Right.
But it is, I will not, I don't think I can watch it again, but it's brilliant and I recommend everyone to watch it.
So I don't know if this is true and I haven't seen it, but here's what I wonder. Todd Phillips directed it.
Yep.
And he comes from the world of comedy.
Yes, he does.
And comedy is not about nuance in the same way. It's about finding that one note and hitting it as hard as you can, as many times as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if this is a drama directed like a comedy, in the sense that you find that one emotional note and you just never deviate from it and you drill it.
Yeah, and that's
I don't know if that's true or not, but I wonder.
Yeah.
Like if you'd given this to like a classical drama director.
Yeah.
If they would have tried to find layers or a little bit of joy, like you say.
Just something, you know, just, and I don't need a lot, just a little moment here or there.
Now, is this just you, do you think? Because you don't like to feel bad?
Oh, no. I don't mind feeling bad. It's funny. Like I was rewatching Royal Tannenbaum. The best moment in that movie was the near suicide scene.
Mm-hmm.
It is dark and it's emotional and it's really well done for Wes Anderson. It's not something you would expect. That's my favorite moment in that movie. So whenever anything is just one note, that was my issue. But by the way, I'm giving like this movie, I'm still giving it like a full recommendation. It's just, that's my one criticism of it.
Did you just call me Coltrane?
God damn. How did Gene Hackman not get a nomination?
Best Supporting Actor.
It's stunning.
No, but what if I did?
he's so good. Wait, Danny Glover's like, you know, when you have stomach cancer, you don't eat 3 cheeseburgers a day. How would you know? Oh, my God. But then that scene becomes very sad because you find out that he lost his first wife because of stomach cancer. Anyway, now we're getting into Royal Tannenbaum.
A totally different thing.
Yeah.
Are there any Scorsese movies that are sort of not super well regarded or popular? Like you said, like Taxi Driver, everybody's always going to say that. Goodfellas, Casino, everybody's always going to say those. Are there any that are sort of off the radar that you love?
I'm going to go in a different direction for a second here.
Okay.
Do you think The Departed is hated by hardcore Scorsese fans because they're like, wait, that's the one?
Yeah,
where he wins?
I do. I think that I actually don't love The Departed. I like it. I don't love it.
If it was directed by someone else, would you like it more?
No, because I think that the story has holes for me. And, you know, I don't know if I love Jack Nicholson's performance.
Mm.
Anyway, there are things I really like about it. I think Leonardo DiCaprio's good.
Damon's great. You know, that
the Alec Baldwin character is kind of silly.
It is, but it's fun.
It's okay. It's not a bad movie. It's a good movie. Yeah, I just don't think it's a great movie. And when you're talking about a guy like him.
Fair. Absolutely.
Like, it's not in my top 10 favorite Martin Scorsese movies.
Yeah.
It's very rewatchable, though.
It is. It is very rewatchable.
It's a little light.
It is.
It's a little light.
It's a fun thriller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think to answer your question, I think for people who love Scorsese, they would love one of his more serious works.
Yeah.
To have won him the Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to think, Nothing Against Ordinary People, which is a perfectly fine movie, but that's one of the great ripoffs of all time at the Oscars.
Oh, yeah.
That won the Best Picture and Raging Bull didn't.
It is a shock.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They went for the L-I-T-E. Well, not that movie's light, but maybe the more.
It's an excellent TV
Hollywood-friendly movie.
It was an excellent TV movie.
It's a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
I really like Cape Fear.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cape Fear is overlooked.
Yep.
And I think the performances in that movie, even though they're over top, are really, really good.
Oh, he is.
After Hours is a great movie.
Ooh.
It's a weird movie.
God, I don't remember the last time I saw After Hours. But De Niro in Cape Fear was fantastic.
If I were to say to you,
yeah,
what do you think of when you think of Martin Scorsese? How would you answer that?
I mean, this first thing is mob movies.
Yeah.
Mob movies done like the master of that genre. That'd be the first thing. And it wouldn't be the only thing. But that's just the first thing that's gonna jump to my head.
It's funny because he's made close to 30 movies.
Yeah,
like so maybe 10% of them are actually mob movies.
Yeah. Second thing, maybe musical docs. You know, the
did you like the Stones one?
Yeah, I did like the Stones.
A lot of people didn't like it. I never saw it.
I enjoyed it. I mean, again, I'm the target audience.
Right, you love the Stones.
Yeah, exactly. But like the last waltz was really good. Like that might be one of the other things I think about. Is that when I think about him?
Yeah, and his use of music in general, like music in his movies, is so good.
Yep,
that guy loves his rock and roll. How long do we got?
About 2 minutes.
Do you have to talk about Sea Giant?
Real quick, speaking of musicals, you want to go to a concert and you don't want to watch a Robert De Niro doc, you want to see it live, seatgiant.ca. They are a Canadian partner on this show. Concert tickets, sporting event tickets, everything and anything in North America, and it's in Canadian dollars. Seatgiant.ca. What's that website? Go to seatgiant.ca, and when you're there, use the discount code Bob and Matt at checkout. You save money. We get a little cut, a little kickback, which is good because doing the podcast ain't free. It ain't expensive, but it also ain't free.
So Leafs in Vegas.
Yeah.
And then Arizona. I've actually circled Colorado because people won't watch the late games during the week, but that's a Saturday night game.
Yeah.
And if they stink on that game like they did last week,
also
that could be Babs' last day at work.
It's also a bad day for Dubas because those forwards do not sign for as much as our forwards.
Right, and also they've been decimated by injury, and it doesn't seem to be holding them back.
Yeah.
Predictions for the next, say, 5 to 10 games for the Leafs?
Next 5 games, 2-3. Next 10 games, 4-6.
So you don't think the ship will be righted?
They haven't given me reason to be optimistic.
I think that I agree it won't be righted, but I think it'll be more positive. Like over the next 10, I could see them, you know, winning 5 or 6 of those games and maybe picking up a point or two in overtime.
Funny how expectations have changed. Now, good is just a little over 500.
Do they miss the playoffs?
Save that for the next pod.
Ooh.
Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.